While attending seminary, I pastored Mount Olivet Baptist Church in Willisburg, Kentucky. We baptized in the Chaplain River. It was a little river that ran right beside the church. The congregation would stand on the shore of the river after our worship services. They would sing the song, "Shall We Gather at the River?" The deacons would walk into the river first and form a circle. I would walk into the middle of the circle with the child or the adult that was going to be baptized. The deacons would tap the top of the water with sticks to the rhythm of the hymn as it was sung. I would baptize the child, and then we would walk out of the waters. I remember the first time we did that, I mentioned to the deacons, I said, what a beautiful, beautiful tradition of you being in the water and tapping the water to the rhythm of the songs. To which Marshall Shoemaker, the chair of deacons, said, "That ain't no tradition. We do that to keep the snakes away." Everyone has a snake story. It is part of the human experience to have a snake story. So a few years after that, I was invited to preach at a Bible conference outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. While I was there, in the middle of a conversation, I heard that there was a snake-handling church a little further out of town in the mountains. And so I asked a minister if he would take me there so that I could witness this, and he did. And I watched as frenzied parishioners opened wooden boxes along the sides of the church, pulled out copperheads and diamondbacks, and held them high and danced and sang together. I have genuflected at Catholic churches. I have clapped and sang at Pentecostal churches. I have sat quietly in a Quaker circle. I have preached at a Jewish synagogue. I have meditated in a Buddhist temple. I have even taken communion at a Methodist church. But I ain't touching a copperhead and dancing with it. Yeah, everyone has a snake story. Everyone here today has a snake story. You've run into a snake in your yard, or you had a snake that's wandered into your house, or a snake as a pet, or a snake at school. We've all got snake stories. Even the first human beings on the face of the earth had a snake story. If Adam and Eve were here today, they would say to you, "Yeah, everything was going fine. We were eating all the right foods and avoiding all the wrong foods, and then there was this snake." Everybody has a snake story. And Numbers chapter 21 is Israel's snake story. They've been wandering in the wilderness for almost 40 years. They're getting tired of the path that they are on. They're getting tired of eating the same old food day after day. I always love the way this is written. "There's no food and water out here. We detest this food." Tired of the same old food day after day, they complain to God, they complain to Moses, and God sends snakes to bite them, and they die. And so they do what you do. They pray and they apologize. "God, we're sorry. We should have never done this. Take the snakes away." And you heard the story. Moses prays for them, and God says to Moses, "Here's what you do. You make a bronze snake, you put it on the top of a stick, you hold it up, and when a person is bitten, if they look up at the bronze snake, they will live." That's Israel's snake story. Of course, it's not really about snakes at all. And we don't learn anything about snakes in this story. This story is really about God's grace. Now, I know, let that sink in for a minute. This doesn't sound very much like grace, God sending snakes to kill people, but believe me, it's a story about God's grace. The only thing we learn in this story is something about God's grace. See, God's grace does not take away all the pain of life. There are a lot of people who live with that idea, that I am a child of God, I love God, I have faith in God, and since God loves me, surely there should be no pain or disease or disruption in my life. That is not a theological truth from the Bible, and that is not part of the human experience. In fact, the text doesn't even say that Israel prayed and the snakes left. That's not the story. The story in verse 9 is, okay, when the snakes bite you, because they're not going anywhere, when the snakes bite you, look up at the bronze serpent and you will live. Grace doesn't eliminate pain or consequences. Grace enables us to survive and live and grow in the midst of our pain and consequences. I was in the ER just about a month ago with a family who had taken their child in. The child was screaming and screaming. I was sitting there with the mom and dad. The child was screaming because he was about to get a shot. And the mom did what all moms do. She said, "Honey, it's going to make you better." The doctor administered the shot, and the child screamed, word for word, "It made me worse." Because there are times in the middle of our pain and our discomfort that we don't understand the grace in the midst of, the healing in the midst of. Grace doesn't take the pain out of life in this story. Grace doesn't take the effort out of life in this story. Again, there are those who believe that if God is on my side, if I'm a child of God, then God's supposed to do all the work for me. Things are supposed to be taken care of. Nope. We are saved by grace. We are children of God because of the undeserved, unearned love of God. That doesn't eliminate our part in the process. And so the text says, tell the people that when they are bitten by a snake, if they look up, if they make an effort, they will not die. Frank Tupper is a theology professor, author, preacher. He was my theology professor. He's been ill this past year, and I've been spinning over many of the things that I learned from him. One of the most cherished things that he said in a class, in fact, I have it written in the front of my Bible. It's there. I see it almost every day. Speaking about the relationship between works and grace, he said once in class, "When it comes to grace, we should always trust as if it all depends on God, but work as if it all depends on us." When it comes to grace, even grace, we should trust that it all depends on God, but work as if it all depends on us. This is the message of the New Testament when you read it in its fullness. Paul says in Philippians chapter 2, we are to work out our own salvation. There are efforts to be made on our part. James says, faith without works is dead. Moses says, if you look up, you will live. God's grace doesn't completely eliminate our effort. God's grace doesn't completely eliminate our pain. But the most important lesson we learn about grace in this story is that God's grace always brings God's character to our lives. And when we learn God's character, we can emulate that character living our lives in relationship to one another. You know, to really see the grace in this story, you need to know the whole story. So I'm going to go take you back to the book of Exodus, if you don't mind. The children of Israel have left Egypt. They go to Mount Sinai and they get the laws, and they leave Mount Sinai, and something we often forget, they leave Mount Sinai and they go straight to the promised land. Do you remember this? Straight there. They leave Egypt, go get the law, and then walk straight to the promised land. They send in some spies, and the spies come back and say, there is no way we can take the land. Doesn't matter how strong our God is, doesn't matter how strong we think we are, there's no way to take the land. We refuse to go in and take the land. We refuse to take the land that God has given us. God took them straight to the promise. No wandering in the wilderness. Took them straight there, but they didn't believe they could take the land. So God sent them into the wilderness, read the story, so that that whole generation would die. Okay, so if you don't believe you can go in, I'm going to send you into the wilderness. You're going to walk around for 40 years till this whole generation dies, and then the next generation I will take to the promised land. They aren't just wandering in the wilderness because they're lost. They're wandering in the wilderness so that they will die off. Numbers chapter 21 is the fifth time, the fifth recorded time, that the Israelites come to God and Moses to complain. We hate this heat, we hate this path, we hate this food, we wish we were still in Egypt, but this time God had had enough. So God sent snakes to bite them, and they were dying, left and right. And the people came to Moses and said, tell God we're sorry, tell God to take the snakes away. When they bite us, we die. Now, if I was Moses, I would have said, you're supposed to be dying. Die already so we can go to the promised land. You're out here to die. But let's say I was more gracious than Moses. And I said, okay, I'm going to go and pray to God on your behalf. If I was God and Moses said the snakes are biting the people and they're dying, if I were God, I would have said, they're supposed to be dying. I sent them in the wilderness to die. I'm just speeding this up a little bit for you so we can get under the promised land. Thank God I'm not God. Because you think about the story. Because God reaches deep into God's character. And what emerges is what always emerges when God's character is revealed. Even to those who are condemned to die, God gives grace and another opportunity at life. Make a serpent of bronze, lift it high, and anyone who looks at it will live. I taught in the prison system several years ago, and I can remember talking to friends of mine about teaching college classes in the prison system, and several of my friends would say things like, why in the world are you educating people there? Why are people getting an access to education there? They're in prison. They're supposed to be punished. And I would always respond, well, prison is the punishment. You don't punish people while they're in prison. Prison is the punishment. And these people don't need to be punished more. What they need is someone to lift a bronze serpent in their midst. I was pastoring in Baxley, Georgia years ago, and David came into my office. David was angry, and his complaint was, you don't preach about sin enough. Truth was, one of his friends was sinning, and he didn't like it, and he wanted me to preach about it. He said, you need to tell people what their faults are. Tell them what the consequences are. Sunday after Sunday, you don't preach about this enough. And my response to David was, and a few other people like him since, has been, you know, most of the people who walk into this sanctuary are well aware of what their struggles are. They already know what their shortcomings are. They don't need me to talk about their shortcomings or tell them about their consequences. They already know. What they need is someone to raise a bronze serpent in their midst. Meg's parents led her into my office when I was a youth minister. I had already heard that she was pregnant. 16 years old, sophomore in high school, pregnant. Her parents brought her into my office hoping that I would give her what for. And when she came in and sat down with her mom and dad, I looked at the fear in her face and tear-stained cheeks and puffy eyes, and I knew she didn't need one more lecture and she didn't need one more sermon. She needed somebody to raise a bronze serpent in her midst. The book of Numbers is not the most popular book in the Bible. But everybody has a snake story, and this is the book that holds Israel's snake story. Do you know the only time Jesus ever quotes from the book of Numbers? The only time Jesus quotes from the book of Numbers. It's in John chapter 12, when Jesus says, just as Moses lifted the serpent up in the wilderness, so must I be lifted up. And if I am lifted up, I will draw all humankind to myself. They will see the truth about grace, that I am not going to take away all of their pain, and I am not going to take away all of their work and their effort, but in me, the true character of God will be revealed. That's grace.